Criminal justice reform in Maine. As protesters here in Maine and across the nation call for an end to racial injustice, Governor Mills has pledged to root out racism in Maine's criminal justice system. She has tasked Public Safety Commissioner Mike Soschuk to review Maine's law enforcement statutes and provide recommendations. The legislature is looking at reforms as well. On Wednesday, two legislative committees, Judiciary and Criminal Justice and Public Safety, will meet for the first time since adjourning in March. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with Maine's Commissioners of Public Safety and Corrections, the legislative co-chair of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee, and several reform advocates about potential changes in policing, courts, and corrections in Maine. Maine Calling is next. But first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. One of the central goals of the Black Lives Matter protests is to eliminate systemic racism in America's criminal justice system. Governor Mills has pledged to do so in Maine. Today, we'll discuss the next steps for our state. Joining me, Charlotte Warren, who is a state representative from Hollowell, who serves as House Chair of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. Michael Soschuk is the Commissioner of Maine's Department of Public Safety, and Randy Liberty is Commissioner of Maine's Department of Corrections. And as always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Is this an issue that you have been following? What do you think needs to be changed in Maine's police system, prisons, and courts? Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. And if you send an email or a post on Facebook, please make that comment brief. We've got a lot of people calling in already today, and we want to get to as many voices as possible. I want to welcome all of you to Maine Calling and back to Maine Calling. Commissioner Soschuk, Governor Mills has tapped you to find ways to reform Maine's criminal justice system. This, as we mentioned, was in response to the protests. What are some of the first steps you are taking to answer the governor's request?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks for having us on, Jennifer. It's good to be back, and certainly on such an important topic for all of us to be discussing. You know, I'm honored to be involved with this process. It is a process, and even though I'll be one of many that'll be part of that conversation, it's one of the very first thing we did right here in the state of Maine, and Commissioner Liberty is also on this board, is the Board of Trustees of the Maine Criminal Justice Academy made a bunch of minimum standard policy changes just last Friday. And I'm happy to go into those.
But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we also approved, a workload analysis and a strategic plan for the Maine Criminal Justice Academy overall as well. And those are very, very big steps for me. Because a lot of the questions that we receive are around police training, and we only have one police academy in the state of Maine, and I think they do a really good job. A lot of good people there, but we also just need to own the fact that we're always trying to evolve and trying to get better. So with that in mind, we know we haven't had a workload analysis since about 2006, and that's way, way too long, and it's been one of my goals since I came into this position to get that process started. So,
what do you mean by that? Workload analysis.
Yeah. So, a workload analysis for the state of Maine would be: so, what do law enforcement officers actually do day in and day out with their work? And how we came to 720 hours for the Maine Criminal Justice Academy based on a workload analysis that was done in 2006. But the reality is that when you look back after 14 years, obviously our profession has changed a great deal. So I think we need to have that workload analysis so that we can determine what do police officers in Maine do in 2020. And is that 720 hours sufficient? Are we training on the right things? Are there new categories and new techniques that our officers should be learning? And I think the obvious answer is yes. Of course, there are all those things that have evolved over the last 14 years. We just want to formalize that process and dig into it a lot more. So we've got the right staff there to do it. And I would think that everybody should be really excited about that opportunity.
And Commissioner Soschek, you said that as of Friday, there are changes. What are some of those changes?
Yeah, thank you for that as well. So a few things, and we could spend, you know, the next 12 hours discussing this alone. But, you know, one of the things that the Attorney General submitted in a report on racial bias and profiling in particular back in March to the legislature gave some options. One of those options was to have law enforcement agencies around the state submit complaint information reference to bias-based policing to their agency, to the Attorney General's office, so that they could in turn look at that information, look for patterns and trends, assist with investigations as necessary. So we've made that into a minimum standard policy to the hate and bias crime minimum standard. So that's one thing in that particular policy. We also really just own the fact that forever, you know, our standard operating procedures and policies, guidelines, were really intended to be internal documents. So an agency would draft a policy, but that would be a policy that police officers that have been to the academy and received training, that they would understand. And the reality is that these procedures and guidelines are now external documents as well. So we try to really clean up a lot of that language to be very explicit about the things that are, in fact, authorized or aren't authorized based on the minimum standards. One of those things would be to ban chokeholds, strangleholds, or any other type of hold that would compromise somebody's airway or blood flow to the head, and prohibit that unless deadly force was actually authorized. That's been the case since the 90s. But it's really buried under a bunch of legalese and what cops would understand based on follow-up training. And we just need to say it's banned, except in this one very small set of circumstances where, in fact, deadly force would be authorized. And that's what you see when you talk about this, that one particular topic around the country. They all have that exception in there. Most of those have that exception in there. Well, if deadly force is authorized. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that may be a technique that that you could use. But, and I'm happy to continue. I don't want to take all your time.
Oh, that's okay. I will turn to Commissioner Liberty now. Commissioner Liberty, a 2019 report from the Vero Institute of Justice indicates that 9% of the people in Maine's prisons are Black, even though Black people are only 2% of the Maine population. And I'm wondering, are those numbers accurate today?
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. Those numbers are actually inaccurate. Those numbers have jumped to 11.21%. So it's even higher than it was back when Vera reported those out. And so we're looking at those numbers, and we're one of the most important things that we're doing now is gathering the data so we can make some informed decisions. And what I've been doing in the last few weeks since the beginning of May is I've assembled a work group for Maine Department of Corrections personnel, a diverse work group, so all voices are heard. And we're reviewing our policies. We're looking at what we're doing right. We're looking at what we're doing wrong, where we have areas of improvement, you know, where our training is right now, how we can diversify that a bit and do those things that we need to do to make change. So I would just like to say initially that I look forward to being part of the solution for this circumstance, working with the legislature and other leadership in the state of Maine. And I want to be part of the solution to improve the system as it exists today.
Yeah, Commissioner Liberty, you have so much experience both as a law enforcement officer, a sheriff, and then also administering jails and the Maine State Prison. And I'm wondering if you have some, even before you're hearing from all of these voices, if you have some priorities, if you have some things that you say, yeah, you know, this is what needs to happen, and this is what needs to happen right away.
I think it's premature right now without all of the data and all the voices being heard. But we are committed to that all manners are treated equally and they're respected. And, as Commissioner Soschek indicated, there are particular areas that we're specifically looking at, like the duty to intervene or exhausting alternatives prior to shooting or use of force continuum. All of those areas we're working aggressively now, and I'm looking forward to working with the legislature in the upcoming session to resolve these issues.
Representative Warren, this Wednesday your committee will meet for the first time in months to talk about criminal justice reforms, and you have been a longtime advocate for reform. What would you like to see happen right away? What are your priorities?
Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you for the opportunity to be on with you today. I think that one of the first things that you learn as a social worker is that you go first to the affected communities and you listen to the affected communities. And I think that our community here in Maine, our state, our country has woken up to the fact that there is some real racial disparities happening in our criminal justice system. Some of us have been fighting to change that for a long time. And I think that the first thing we need to do is look at the affected community. And I hope that Governor Mills, although she's asking Commissioner Soschuk to come forward with recommendations, I hope she'll also refer to the Permanent Commission on the Status of Racial, Indigenous, and Maine Tribal Populations. They reached out with a rather long memo to the governor on June 18th with very specific recommendations. And one of those specific recommendations is to fund that permanent commission. We all, I know my friends, Commissioner Liberty and Commissioner Soschuk, and I have heard former Chief Justice and now Dean of the Maine Law School say repeatedly, you manage what you measure. We need to start measuring what's happening in Maine, right? You mentioned the Vera report. You mentioned that number for adult population has increased to 11%. If you look at the kids in our state who have been detained in Long Creek, the youth prison, that's 23% of those kids held in Long Creek are kids of color. That's a serious problem. We need to start measuring why is that happening? Why are we seeing all of these racial disparities? What can we then do to fix them?
Well, let me follow up on that with Commissioner Soschuk. We hear people, and this is just one kind of measure, but we hear people talking about their experience of driving while Black, and a lot of anecdotal evidence that in Maine, law enforcement officers are more likely to pull over Black drivers. Is it true that Maine does not track racial data when it comes to traffic stops?
Yeah, so I think that I was asked this question a few weeks ago at a press conference in Portland, and the reality is I think we do a poor job of tracking data overall in the state of Maine. And I also think it's a valid question to say, you know, how much data is too much data, right? I'm also asked that in different settings by in some cases, the same individuals. So, yes, I think we can do a better job of tracking that information. We do pull, however, race, gender, and age when you're involved with an actual traffic citation. But in some departments, small and large, traffic warnings, as an example, aren't tracked in the same exact way. The crime data, uniform crime reporting, stuff that goes to the FBI, also collects very similar information to include ethnicity, but is not comprehensive. That's really one segment of interaction between law enforcement and those we serve. So certainly there's room for improvement, to say the least, on the data collection side of the house.
All right. Well, we are talking about criminal justice reform. If you'd like to send an email, a brief email, our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Commissioner Liberty, you've long been an advocate for changes in the criminal justice system, for example, by promoting drug courts and veterans courts while you were Kennebec County Sheriff. What more needs to be done to reduce recidivism and help those released return to society? And I'm wondering if you see racial disparities there as well.
I think the important thing to do in the criminal justice system is ask why people are in the system to begin with. It could be any number of issues surrounding mental health, substance abuse, poverty, neglect, trauma. All of those things are what lead people to be incarcerated and have police involvement. And so I think that investments in the community, any way that we can invest to address those needs, myself and Representative Warren, and she co-chaired the committee, and we're talking about the task force last session regarding mental health and what we can do and how can we do a better job addressing those with mental illness. And so if we capture them and divert them prior to and treat them prior to involvement in law enforcement, everyone wins fiscally and morally, I feel. If they are incarcerated, I think it's the duty of the sheriffs and the Department of Corrections to provide those programs which reduce recidivism. And we know things like University of Maine at Augusta that conducts programs in the Maine State Prison and throughout Maine Department of Corrections. We only have a 7% recidivism rate because, like all of us, if you're educated, you have a broader view and you have more opportunities in the community. If we provide mental health, substance abuse programming, trauma-informed programming, those individuals come back at much lesser rates. And so it's important for us to provide that programming and to invest in the community.
Representative Warren, I want to return to you. Lawmakers write laws, and I want to talk about some of the specific measures you might be looking at. You mentioned Long Creek, the youth facility. I know that many people have called for its closure. Is the legislature looking at that? Are you looking at bail reform, drug sentencing reform?
Yes, all of the above and more, right? I think that Commissioner Liberty just said it really well, that we need to figure out a way to start diverting a lot of the funds that we send to law enforcement to deal with an entire host of problems in our society, right? Somebody struggling with substance use disorder, we let the police deal with that, right? Somebody's having a mental health disorder, a mental health crisis. In Maine, when you call 911, who replies? It's a law enforcement officer, right? So you're absolutely right. We need to change the laws that actually criminalize issues that we could deal with in a much less expensive, much less restrictive, and much more effective way. That means taking away some of the responsibilities also of police officers. I don't know when as a society we decided that they should deal with everything that they have on their plate. And the way that we do that is to make some things no longer criminal offenses. Now, that's where people sort of get the hair on the back of the neck up. Wait, you want to reduce crimes, right? Well, that's the only way we actually keep people out of prison and jails. It's a lot less expensive to keep
when you
people
say
out.
Things that are not considered criminal offenses, do you mean things like drug possession?
Yeah. Exactly. I think restructuring drug sentencing. I think taking a look at, I have a bill currently that lessens a lot of sort of crimes that currently exist in the hunting and fishing statutes and the traffic statutes, turning them into civil violations so that folks are still being punished. They're still having to pay a fine, but they're not clogging up our criminal justice courtrooms, et cetera, with, you know, they caught too large of a fish or they inadvertently ran, you know, some sort of stop sign. There are ways that we can reduce criminal penalties to civil penalties.
All right. Well, we are talking about criminal justice reform. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. Encore Renewable Energy, committed to fueling Maine's economic recovery with solar energy for businesses and institutions. Encore.eco. And Trueline, a full-service marketing and branding agency who believes in the value of local independent journalism. Online at wearetrueline.com.
I'm Marco Werman. At The World, we're always looking beyond our borders to get the global take on the news. That's especially important as we deal with a pandemic. We take you to places where the coronavirus struck first, places that may recover from its effects before the U.S. Join us as we take on each day's news from a global perspective. That's why we call it The World.
Join us for The World this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Welcome to Maine Public's This is My Maine.
So to me, Maine is a place that thrives on collaboration and innovation. I think the thing that is most exciting to me about Maine is the fact that we innately love and care for our neighbors. And in that, we are creating and doing incredible things. I think downtown Lewiston is an incredible kind of example of the collaboration and neighborliness and partnership that happens here in Maine. Anytime I ever talk about Maine, I talk about the fact that we're neighborly, and that's something that we bring to all of our work. I'm Sam from Lewiston Auburn, and this is My Maine.
This is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to mainepublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what it will take to reform Maine's criminal justice system. Joining me, Public Safety Commissioner Michael Soschuk, Corrections Commissioner Randy Liberty, and Representative Charlotte Warren, who is House Chair of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. We invite you to be part of the conversation. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Before we go to calls, Mike Soschuk, I want to go back to you because Charlotte Warren was talking about diverting funding from police activities to more social workers. This is related to the sort of the call we're hearing throughout the nation of defunding the police. And I'm wondering what your response is to this call.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And you know, I think that all three of your guests today, Charlotte, myself, Randy, have really been discussing the lack of funding and the lack of resources for those that suffer specifically from behavioral health issues. I would certainly expand that out to housing and poverty. The other things that Randy had mentioned and Representative Warren as well, I think that there's no question that that should be the focal point of these conversations. And if communities are having conversations about right-sizing all of those various segments of their services, then they should have that. But I would just caution people to understand that in that conversation, you may say, that until we get these services to a level that's appropriate, we may not be in a position to fund police, or we may keep police where they are in order to keep us safe overall, but we want to enhance these other aspects of our service delivery. And I think communities should absolutely have those conversations. I can tell you that, as one example, the Maine State Police haven't had a patrol enhancement to staffing levels since the 1970s. At the same time, all of these other service levels have just absolutely exploded in that over that time frame. So when I hear that and when I see that, I think that we just need to make sure that all those facts are actually on the table, so we can have a complete conversation about that issue.
All right. Calling in now, Joseph Jackson, director of the Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition. Thanks so much for calling in, Joseph.
Thank you, Jennifer.
I know you've been doing this work for a long time. I want you to, from your perspective, where are the places in the system where systemic racism takes hold?
Well, I mean, I think it takes place firstly in the language and in the foundation of many of these systems. And that would be my first answer. And then my second part is that when you look at the decision makers and the policy makers, there's a lack of diversity in those areas of those folks that are making these decisions about, you know, our entire population and communities.
Okay. What types of reform would you like to see as the Maine legislature committees meet on Wednesday and as the governor turns to seeking reform? What could really make a difference, especially in the short term?
Well, definitely. I loved Representative Warren's suggestion of that police shouldn't be called for everything. I think that when we they're no longer being called to take the cat out of the tree, you know, that's at one point that was part of their duties. But when you look at the different communities within our state, when you start looking that way, policing is different. In some communities, the question is, are you okay? How are you doing? Even when someone has been driving under the influence, they get escorted home, for instance. And in other areas, they go to jail. And so when we start seeing the disproportionate numbers of folks in the system, especially Black people that are adversely impacted, but when we look at who's making all the decisions, when you look at that demographic, it's, you know, there are very few people of color, and definitely very few Blacks. That's one of the things I think. I also think that racial justice task force commission to be funded definitely is one of the step forward, because we have to have information about who's being stopped. When we look at schools, for instance, we're looking at Lewiston as one of the hottest spots with the highest rate of suspensions, and predominantly young people of color. When we look at the administrators and we look at the educative body of that, they're predominantly don't look like the student body. And so I think that one is we had to figure out ways to get more people of color and Black people in particular in positions of decision making and power.
Mm. Joseph, thanks so much for calling in. Before we let you go, I was wondering if any of my panelists have any questions for Joseph Jackson or comments you'd like to make.
I would just like to say that as warden of the Maine State Prison and as a as the commissioner of Department of Corrections, it's been, you know, a pleasure working with Mr. Jackson. He's a strong advocate. He tells me things I don't often want to hear or uncomfortable, but it's important for me to hear from his perspective. And I think the solution out of our current circumstances for all of us to listen and truly hear what people of different perspectives have to say and respect that. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Commissioner Liberty.
And Representative Warren?
Thank you. I just wanted to underscore what Joseph said about the Permanent Commission on the status of racial, indigenous, and Maine tribal populations. More of what their work could be if they were properly funded, when the chief executive makes the decision to appoint people to it. Another role that they could have is helping us build the bench of persons of color in power, whether that looks like superintendents of schools or law enforcement officers, or please more people run for the Maine legislature, right? We need that. And again, you manage what you measure, right? So we need that commission funded. We need it staffed. We need folks appointed to it. We could really, the governor's asking Commissioner Soschuk to make some recommendations, and I just want to say again that I hope she'll take these recommendations from the affected communities, because it's a real place to start.
Sure. Thank you for calling in, Joseph Jackson, director of the Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition. We're going to go to Bill, who's calling from Stratford, New Hampshire. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling regarding the police themselves. If you look at the videos that I've seen, the reaction or non-reaction to the crowd of asking the policeman to get his knee off the guy's neck, or the other ones, that it appears that they don't even know what's going on around them. I just wonder, is there any therapy being given to the police to help them deal with criminal situations that they deal with every single day? It must affect their mental status, and they could be getting help to correct that.
Commissioner Soschuk.
Yeah, it's a super question. And, you know, and I think I'll say the obvious is that when every human being on the planet watches the murder of George Floyd, they are disgusted and appalled by exactly what happened. That police officer killed Mr. Floyd, period. And the reality is that should have never happened anywhere in any set of circumstances. And to see somebody who's sworn to uphold the law and in fact treat everyone as equals commit that grotesque crime for all of us to see, it's certainly shaken us as a profession. It's shaken me personally and professionally to see that happen. So there's absolutely no excuse for any of that to occur. But I would say in 2020, and certainly over the last 10 years or so, that the profession itself has been much better recognizing the fact that as human beings, we put on a uniform and all that other fun stuff, but as human beings, this work will have an impact on you. And if it's not dealt with appropriately, it can negatively impact the individual, the officer, and that officer can also negatively impact those that they are sworn to serve because of the stress level that they're faced with. But none of that should ever be, and we will ever use it as an excuse for criminal conduct like we saw in Minneapolis. And I'll tell you that, you know, Commissioner Liberty is a true champion of this, and to see him speak on these kind of issues is a very powerful time. And Representative Warren, we've discussed that in front of Criminal Justice and Public Safety in the past as well. So you've got three real champions of that particular issue for sure.
Bill, thank you for your call. I want to go to Kyle on Facebook. He has a question for Commissioner Liberty. What percentage of the black prison population is there for nonviolent crimes? Do you know?
Do not know. We're digging into that data, and that's certainly an identified weak point in the system. You know, to specifically to carve those particular data points out to give us informed decision making. So we're working on that as we speak. And I expect in the next several months we'll have a better idea of just exactly what we have.
All right. And an email from Linda. I'll give this to you, Representative Warren. Linda asks, do you think a public defender service would serve to better represent people charged with felony crimes in Maine? A lot of discussion about Maine's system and that we do not have a public defender system.
Thank you for the question. Yes, thank you, Linda. I do not serve on the Judiciary Committee anymore, although I previously did. I don't know enough about what – I know that the system we currently have is not working, and I know that because way too many people are having to plead out because they don't have access to an attorney. It needs to be fixed, absolutely. I don't know that a public defender system is the right one. I want to learn more about that. I want to support the right thing when that recommendation comes out that is being studied. I do know one thing that would make a large difference is to reform the bail system in this state. And that's certainly something that I'm working on. And when we think about the court system, that would make a large difference for anybody who is a member of a vulnerable population.
Representative Warren, what changes would you like to see in the bail system?
Well, for the very top thing, I don't think that people who haven't been convicted of a crime should be sitting in our county jail system simply because they can't afford to pay their cash bail. When you look at our county jails, which cost Mainers $95 million a year, 80% of that coming straight from the property tax bills that pay the counties, right? That's a lot of money. And we've got a lot of folks that are simply in there because they can't afford to pay cash bail. They have not yet been adjudicated of a crime. For me, that goes against everything our country believes in, innocent until proven guilty. We need to change
yeah.
that cash
Commissioner
bail.
Liberty, you've run a jail. Do you agree?
I agree. There are far too many individuals that lack the resources, that aren't able to come up with bail, and they sit in jail as a result of it. People with a similar crime that have means, they post bail and they're released. And so I agree. We need bail reform. And in fact, I've gone so far as to assist with bail myself to get some of these individuals out. You think about that. Someone that doesn't have means, sitting in jail, they can't work. Not quite sure who's watching the children. Maybe they can't pay their rent and sitting in jail. And so I think no good comes of the bail system that keeps nonviolent offenders in a county jail.
Joining us now, Ryan Anderson. She is Executive Director of the Restorative Justice Institute of Maine. Thanks for calling in, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about how restorative justice fits into the conversation about systemic racism in the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm. It's important to know that restorative justice as an alternative to the criminal justice system is rooted in Indigenous resistance. That's where this work came from. The histories I know most about are from New Zealand and North America, where Indigenous folks were having their families torn apart by the state, by the criminal justice system. And they spoke up and said, you know, enough is enough. We're losing our families. We're losing our communities. And out of generosity also said, we have practices that we've been using for millennia that keep communities intact while also addressing public safety and accountability. And they shared those practices. And we've been using them in the United States for 50 years now. And we're seeing really good results in terms of the ways that this work reduces recidivism and increases satisfaction of everybody, voice and choice and power of everybody involved. And under the right conditions can also reduce disproportionate minority contact in the system.
When you say under the right conditions, what do you mean?
We need to move money to the communities that need it most. This work is already being done in Black and Indigenous and other communities of color across Maine and across the country. And those are the most under-resourced communities that we know of. And that's why they're landing in the criminal justice system. It is because of lack of resources. The wisdom is there and the practices are there. We need to move money out of the criminal justice system and into the communities that need it most.
Ryan, thanks for calling in. Ryan Anderson, Executive Director of the Restorative Justice Institute of Maine. We are going to take another quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation about criminal justice reform, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Cancer Specialists. Proud to be a member of the Dana-Farber Cancer Care Collaborative. Learn more at newenglandcancerspecialists.org. Breakwater in Portland, offering summer day camp programs for kids ages 3 to 18. Registration at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. And Evergreen Home Performance, sending its heartfelt thanks to Maine's healthcare workers, first responders, elder care workers, and all the everyday heroes helping Maine people.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Penobscot entertainer Lucy Princess Wadawaso Nicolarpula was born on the Penobscot Indian Island Reservation on June 22, 1882. She and her sisters Emma and Florence were activists for Native rights in the state of Maine. When Penobscots living on reservations in Maine gained the right to vote in 1955, Lucy cast the first ballot. As a teen, she was one of the charter members of the Islands Wabanaki Club, a women's club admitted to the Maine Federation of Women's Clubs in 1897.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries and Maine Maritime Museum. Happy birthday, Maine!
The Daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus now has a new three-day-a-week schedule, regularly meeting on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On these 3 days, it will normally happen at 2 o'clock. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, the briefings are archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and others is now normally scheduled for 2 o'clock Monday, Wednesday, and Friday afternoons, and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about reforming Maine's criminal justice system. My guest, Commissioner Randy Liberty with the Department of Corrections, Commissioner Michael Soschuk with the Department of Public Safety, and Representative Charlotte Warren, House Chair of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Going to go to a message from Facebook. This is from Kelly. In 2006 and again in 2015, the FBI has issued warnings on widespread infiltration of law enforcement agencies by white supremacists. When we look at the extent of murders of Black people by police with those FBI reports in mind, shouldn't we do background checks on all officials involved in the justice system for affiliation with a white supremacy or hate group? Commissioner Soschuk, does that not happen?
Yeah, actually it does. And it's a great question. It's a great point. You know, I can just only speak for the state of Maine, I suppose, when I say that, you know, job suitability exams where you sit down and talk with a psychologist are mandated by the Board of Trustees in Maine. Polygraphs for, you know, applicants for law enforcement positions in our state are mandated. There are specific questions regarding white supremacy, as an example, or biased overall. I would certainly say that nothing is perfect, but we also have very specific guidelines for background investigations that our law enforcement agencies are required to abide by when they do hire. You know, in a previous life as a chief of the Portland Police Department, we would routinely hire less than 5% of those that have applied because it's a very, very thorough process. And I know that there are other states, as an example, that don't certify their police officers, that don't require polygraphs for their applicants. So we do have a pretty robust system around that, but always happy to discuss it further if somebody has any additional recommendations that they think would be helpful.
Calling in now, team Chenzira Boykin, a community activist and director of client solutions for Reconnect, Inc. Thanks for calling in, Atim.
Thanks for having me.
You not only work in the area of criminal justice reform, but have an interesting link to the current protests over police brutality.
Yeah.
Tell us about your connection to Rayshard Brooks, the black man shot to death by a police officer in Atlanta.
Rayshard answered a Craigslist post we put out to interview respondents in Washington, D.C. and Atlanta, Georgia. He's one of 144 respondents to get some information about how we could create tools, software, and hardware to support criminal justice reform. Right now, we have a system that's punitive, and we want to move it towards something that's more supportive with our software and hardware.
So you interviewed him before his death?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. That was important. And we're glad that we were able to share his voice and highlight his humanity. What I hear about the Vera report and what I found on Prison Policy Initiative is important to note when you look at the demographics of a state, a county, or a city, and you look at the population in jail and the prisons, and you have to note there's a change that needs to happen.
You know, you talked about doing the interviews in Washington, D.C. and Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, team, if you've been following the criminal justice system closely in Maine, here where you live, and what do you feel is missing or what needs to be changed?
Well, you know, we started in a space, Reconnect started in a space with specialty courts, and we've moved more into the space of probation and parole. I left San Francisco as a co-founder of a young adult court. The district attorney's office, public defenders, the court, and I was the director of the clinical arm. It's tailoring, like what Rayshard said, he wants to be treated like an individual. It tailors responses for us, for individuals. It doesn't criminalize being young. It looks and supports people with their barriers and gets them through with a bridge for support of employment and understanding what their mental health history and whatever else that might be to support them. We need to be more supportive than punitive. So following the criminal justice system here, I hear about Long Creek. First of all, when you go to these ideas of super predators and you have these disproportionate jail sentences or people who might be tossed into prison as opposed to the support that they need, I think we need to be more humane. And one last thing I'd like to say is DiRiggio is to direct and lead. And sometimes leaders and directors are great followers first. There's plenty of evidence-based programs throughout the United States, like San Francisco, that we don't necessarily have to use. We don't have to recreate the wheel. We can follow best practices, things that do work, and bring them here.
Sure. And Commissioner Liberty, you're a big believer in the specialty courts, but they're not funded well in Maine, are they?
No, they're not. And as you're aware, about 10 years ago, we created a veterans court with Justice Mills and the veterans pod in Augusta. And we spent a lot of time really looking at military veterans overall, what exactly, what often happens when they return from war and the post-traumatic stress related to that and maybe the aggression or maybe the self-medication and addiction. And so we had great success with Justice Mills. Obviously, she's a Maine treasure.
And now we have a second one in Portland, but it certainly doesn't meet the need. And this follows my comments earlier. These are one way that the criminal justice system can do some diversion work and keep people out of a correctional facility and really identify those causation factors. Why are they there? Treat those conditions, whatever they may be, and they're much, much less likely to enter the system and cost folks a whole lot more money.
Atim Chenzira Boykin, thanks so much for calling in. He's a community activist and works with Reconnect, Inc. I'm going to go to Jim, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. Jim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
What I would like to say is that I'm a black man. I was sentenced like 10 years ago, maybe, for a crime in the Maine Department of Correction. And the crime that I committed, there was more white guys in the system that committed a worse crime than I did, and their sentence was way less than mine. I surrendered my time. I didn't fight my case. But every guy I met throughout the DOC that I was dealing with, they committed a war crime. So my heart and feeling is that every judge, every DA, or the prosecutor, when they put a black and white side by side, they do not give them fair or equal. It's not fair and equal across the board. The other point I wanted to make, when I was in prison, there was a few blacks in there. I wanted to have a black roommate with me because I felt safer then. And, you know, because of whatever the reason was, they would not allow me and this other black guy to roommate. And I felt comfortable roommate with my own kind. So what they did, they separated us, and I called more hell for doing my sentencing because I was isolated, and I felt alone, and I was by myself. Those are my comments, because the system, there is a racial inequality here in Maine, and it's kept at a low profile. Thank you.
Jim, I really appreciate your call. Commissioner Liberty, did you want to respond?
There are times, and one of the most challenging aspects of running a correctional facility is to reduce conflicts. And we have individuals, that's their full-time job, to identify who may have been co-conspirators, who may have victimized someone's family, and try to create a community within the walls that is sustainable for the clients and for the staff. And so it's a challenge to try to get the right people in the right place and keep everyone safe.
Mm. Jim, thank you for your call. I'm going to move to Doug, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Doug. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to point out that before I went to jail, and I also am a graduate of the Penobscot County Drug Corps program, I worked in government for many years, in the governor's office and Congress. I was Maine's Deputy Secretary of State. I tell those things only because when I worked in government, I thought I knew a thing or two about the criminal legal system, but not until I went to jail did I realize, for example, Maine incarcerates three times more people than Canada per capita, three times more than Canada, five times more than Norway. If Maine was a country, I'll be brief, if Maine was a country, we would be in the top 10, as would every other state in the United States. We would be in the top 10 in the world of nations, of the 200 nations in the world, in the percentage of people we incarcerate. So it starts with the fact that we are massively over-incarcerating. Secondly, we need to do more, and you talked about mental health. We need to make mental health first aid, it's an 8-hour course, we need to make it a requirement of everyone who works in law enforcement and in our jails and prisons. It's good for them. It's good for the people they serve in the jails and the prisons. We have a terrible problem with the way people are treated in our jails and prisons. Commissioner Liberty, Randy, there's an email from me to you. It's also copied to Ryan and Anna about this. I would love to work with you to make mental health first aid a requirement of everyone who works in our jails and prisons and in law enforcement. I'll end with that. Thank you.
All right. Doug, thanks so much for your call. I want to go to you, Commissioner Liberty, but also to you, Representative Warren. Go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, so mental health first aid is a requirement in the basic corrections course. So any individual that's coming into the Maine Department of Corrections or working in the jail system now receives the mental health first aid, and they have since 2018. In addition to that, many of the jails, and when I was sheriff of Kennebec County, 80% of our law enforcement and our corrections officers also attended the CIT, Crisis Intervention Team training, which is administered by NAMI, Maine. Same goes for the Maine Department of Corrections. We've held many CIT trainings, and those trainings are much more in-depth and give there's much merit to attending those trainings. And I appreciate your comments because you're absolutely correct. The mental health first aid and crisis intervention team training give the correctional officers those tools to deal with people with mental illness. Thank you for your question.
Representative Warren, about Doug's other point about that we're over-incarcerating in general, I'm guessing that you agree.
I do. I do agree. I agree because it's ineffective, and I agree because it's extremely expensive. We spend a lot of time in Maine talking about what should we spend our money on, right? We have a lot of fights. We spend all night long trying to figure out what should we spend our money on. I want us to have conversations about what we shouldn't be spending our money on. And we are spending so much money on incarcerating people, right? As opposed to shifting those dollars and preventing that interaction in the first place, right? And often that means shifting those dollars so that folks who are struggling with mental health, folks that are struggling with substance use disorder, they get support. One of your callers talked about that. They get support instead of punishment. That's what actually works. It can be done. It is being done in other states. We just have to have the political courage to do that. What I mean by political courage is somehow in Maine, we still think our constituents want us to be tough on crime. They don't. They've learned that lesson. They want us to spend less money on something that doesn't work. That means we have to change our policies.
We have just about a minute left, and I want to get to you, Commissioner Soszczuk, because several calls coming in about unconscious bias, wondering what is being done and what do you want to see done to address unconscious bias in police officers?
Yeah, so to be real quick, and I want to make sure I put this in there as well, that the governor's been very clear in a number of statements, to include her opening remarks on Friday for the law school, that this administration will and is excited about working with the Permanent Commission on the Status of Racial and Ethnic Populations, and that will happen, and I'm excited to be working with them as well, kind of moving forward. I wanted to make sure I said that. Because that has been out in the public a great deal. And I do think that when we talk about implicit bias, all levels of the system, all levels of society really need to look at that issue. It's incredibly important. We are talking about systemic issues, not individual issues. So thank you very much for having us on today.
And thank you to all of you. That was Michael Soszczuk, the Commissioner of Maine's Department of Public Safety. Charlotte Warren, a state representative from Hollowell who serves as House Chair of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Today's program will be rebroadcast at 7 this evening. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay with us for the latest update from the CDC. Director Nirav Shah today will be joined by DHHS Commissioner Jean Lambrew. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.